is digital marketer. This week, it's Albert Briggs. Albert is the VP of Sales and Strategy for NiceKicks. And today, he's talking with Garrett about shoppable content, strategies for making your video ads succeed through talent development, and what you can learn from YouTube toy review videos.
Albert Briggs.
What's up?
VP of Sales and Brand Strategy at NiceKicks.
That's right.
What is NiceKicks?
NiceKicks is the epitome of storytelling in the sneaker culture.
Okay.
Not only were we the first sneaker blog on the internet, but we have this incredible team of writers and people who live within that sneaker culture that understand the history of all of these shoes. We've got this very, very impressive looking Instagram, just beautiful, beautiful imagery of these amazing shoes. And then you go to the .com and it's some of the best sneaker stories you're going to find. So awesome, awesome experience.
Yeah.
If you're into sneakers, if you're a sneakerhead, you've obviously heard of NiceKicks. If you're, hey, what shoes should I buy? NiceKicks is the place to go. They help you point you in that right direction.
Yeah.
Or if you just want to see awesome artwork on shoes.
There you go.
That's the spot.
Awesome. It is crazy to me. I was never involved in sneaker culture growing up. I had no idea really that this was a thing until a couple of years ago when I really started seeing all of this content be produced and consumed at scale. Like, we're talking billions of people looking at sneakers all the time on the internet and like involved in the, you know, reselling programs and involved in just this whole culture. It's amazing to see, and it's cool to, you know somebody who's a part of that kind of revolution, if you will.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about influence and statement.
Like, yeah,
you look at anybody who has done something big, or one of your friends that got a new pair of NiceKicks. You are looking at them like, oh, where'd you get those? Like, what, how did you get those? Where'd you, like, how much did those cost? There's that influence element to it. And so as social media started growing, I think that really skyrocketed sneaker culture, because you can now broadcast that to thousands, millions of people, if you will. And then making a statement. I mean, you look at guys like Russell Westbrook in the NBA, after every game this season, he's giving his sneakers, he's giving his shoes, his game-worn shoes, autographing them and giving them to fans, young fans.
It's so cool.
So, like, that's such a positive statement for a position of power, a celebrity, if you will, saying, hey, these are literally one of a kind and I'm going to give this to you. Thanks for your support.
Yeah. So if you're listening out there right now and thinking, what the hell are sneakers going to do to help me improve my business? Or how in the world is this related to marketing? Just wait, because this is about to get good. So Albert Briggs is a good friend of mine, and we've spent plenty of time together over the years. We actually used to work together over at thechive.com. And Albert led all of our national sales divisions over there. And we worked very closely on a lot of really fun deals with big brands like Shell, Netflix, Diageo, all kinds of cool people.
That's right.
So one of the things that Albert and I did really well together was we were so focused on, you know, the brand strategy, the storytelling experience for brands through content. And that's kind of what led us both to where we're at today. And so today I really want to focus on how stories and content can propel a brand's perception in the marketplace, but ultimately the bottom line. You know, we talk about this idea of it's so important to create content. It's so important to have a content marketing strategy. But damn, I'm putting all these hours and all this effort into content marketing, and I'm not seeing those returns like I would in, you know, putting out an email and setting up my advertising campaign. But it all comes together, you know, and Albert is an expert on this topic. So before we dive into all of that, Albert, let's take us back to the beginning. How did you get involved in this world that you're in right now? How did you get involved in the world of advertising, sales, and marketing?
That's a good question. I feel like everything always starts from a friend, right? So my first job in this space was Sports Illustrated. I had a friend connect me with somebody who worked over there. And I always like to say that I got my first job because of my voicemail. Mm-hmm. And I haven't changed my voicemail since.
Albert.
You know it. Yeah, it's internationally known. Uh-huh. For those that have ever called me, I'm not going to give out my phone number on here. But I missed the call to set up the interview, and I have a voicemail on there, and my eventual boss was like, that is the best voicemail I've ever heard. And he's cracking up. They call me back to hear it. Like, and amazing. It's one of the, we have to talk to you. We have to meet the man behind the voicemail. And as I've gone through my career, I have continued to hear people say, oh my gosh, that's such a funny voicemail, such mm-hmm. a funny voicemail. So I credit a lot of it to having a very funny voicemail, but I initially started at Sports Illustrated and best group of people. This is in Los Angeles. Best group of people on the planet. They really, really were passionate about the SI brand, from the magazine to the .com to the event activations that they were doing. And I looked at the position that I was in, a sales assistant, and not only did we have tickets to every Los Angeles sporting event, but my boss had this beautiful home, beautiful family, dog, he's got a pool. And I was like, oh my gosh, how do you have that? I want that. I want to continue down this path. And he was like, hey, you've got a future in it. You know, you're personable, you're charismatic, trying to make me feel good. And that's what he always did.
Oh yeah.
But stick with it. And he's like, and you could be even more successful. I love that. And I stuck with it. And luckily I started at a company that I believed the message and I mm-hmm. believed the stories they were telling. And I said, there's really something to being able to tie in telling a story with selling a program, to your consumers, if you're direct to consumers.
Totally. It's interesting. You've worked with all of these big major brands and seen a lot of different perspectives. And recently, I guess maybe what, year and a half ago, you started this kind of new brand out on your own called Made for Dad, correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what was this all about?
You know, it's changed, I guess, a few times, and it hasn't grown to mass scale, if you will.
Yeah.
But it initially was, let's just have a brand that's a better voice for dads. And then it kind of evolved as a lot of the high profile men in entertainment and in sports and in media were just being bad guys and just getting dragged through the mud of like, hey, we might be able to be a little bit something more and be the face of good quality dads mm-hmm. and encourage people to frankly hang out with their kids. Like, just spend some more time with your kids, be a good parent by setting a good example. And that is going to help our future generations. So, you know, it was one of those things where we just started telling jokes. We just started on social media. Let's tell some dad jokes. Everybody loves or hates a good dad joke.
I personally, we have a Wednesday meeting every mm-hmm. week here at Digital Marketer, and I personally have brought the dad jokes to the stage. I try to do it about once a month, and I get a lot of groans from the audience. I try to bring a dad joke up to the stage and, you know, say my best little bit, but everyone seems to hate it. Yeah. So
there's two or three people out there that are taking mental notes and they're sharing those with their friends. I guarantee it.
Oh, yeah.
I guarantee
it.
Yeah. You don't want to admit that you like dad jokes, but you love dad jokes.
You love them.
Except for my son. He's like so over dad jokes now. He's just like, oh my gosh. So that's where it started. And then we kind of evolved to what I'm calling hero content, hero dad content. And that's the celebration of dads being phenomenal.
Yeah.
And then we started figuring out, okay, we might be able to actually productize this and say, let's tap into a community of innovative dads. Some of them are well-known, some of them aren't well-known, but they're creative and they know how to find fun ways to spend with your kids. Yeah. And we might be able to turn that into something that's a business. Like, if you're a busy dad, like let's say you travel 2-3 days a week, you come home, you know, your enemy is the TV. Your mm-hmm. enemy is putting your kid in front of that TV or on YouTube. But you want to sit there and watch TV and they want to sit there and watch TV. So it's like, let's prepackage programs. Let's prepackage ways for you and your kids to hang out.
Yeah.
And
so
that's
smart.
That's the, you know, getting there evolution of what we're doing with the Made for Dad brand. It's a brand that is made to make it easy for you to have fun with your kids.
No doubt.
Yeah.
And I watched you hustle on social media for a while there, just putting out content on the daily, repetition, good content, funny content, involving the community. Through that experience, what tips do you have for someone trying to grow a brand new social media presence?
I would say have a plan. Yeah. You know, there's an old saying, finish your week before you start it. You know, if you have, hey, I'm going to come out with this many pieces today, these are the subjects that I'm going to cover, and as specific as you can leading into that week, it makes everything easier.
Yeah.
I noticed when the content would suffer or we would start to get behind was when I waited last minute. I don't really have a plan. I don't know what I'm going to be doing here. And, you know, I think a partner, somebody to work with always helps with that. And I can credit my wife. She's literally did everything cool and creative, but was just behind the camera doing all of that for Made for Dad. But it's just plan it out because if you look at it from a, oh my gosh, I've got to do six pieces of content today. I've got to come up with four jokes. You know, I've got to do all this. On that day, you're going to be stressed out.
Oh, yeah.
So, finish that week before it starts, baby.
Yep. I just recently taught like a social media, developing your social media plan workshop here at DM. And we talked about that, just like setting up your work week before you actually get started.
Yeah.
And know your plan before you walk in the door or else it's going to drive you mad.
Yeah.
I mean, sitting there and knowing like, man, I've got to put out a post on this channel today, on this channel, and then I got to do, you know, all these different content types. I mean, there's just so much to do. Having a plan is so important. So there's a million different ways that I want to take this conversation today, but one direction I got to just jump into is the idea of the importance of community with a brand. Obviously, when we worked together at The Chive, community was a huge, huge part of that business. Here at Digital Marketer, we've got a massive community of marketers who rally together. At Nice Kicks, you've got the entire, you know, Nice Kicks community, but a community of sneakerheads. So from your experience and from your perspective, what does community mean for a brand? Why is it so important?
I would say that what community really means is zeroing in on who you truly are and who you want to be and being authentic. And I use air quotes because it's such a overused term, being authentic to who that is, you know, at Nice Kicks, it's in the name of the company. It's like, we aren't trying to be anybody who we're not. We are trying to be a website, a channel, if you will, that is for sneakerheads. Mm-hmm. We are going to show you nice shoes.
Yeah.
And it's just a simple way to understand that. Now, there's shortcuts, you know, getting to a market first, right? Like that's a smart way to say, hey, we've unearthed this interesting community, but it's really making sure that you're staying true to who your audience is. And then that community will form around you.
Yeah.
Surprise and delight them. Show them stuff that says, hey, we actually care about you. Mm-hmm. And we're not just here to sell you something at all times. We're here to help you.
Yeah.
And I would say that's really, you know, going back to when you and I were at the Chive, that was really the crux of the community element of that business was we are here to serve you and we are here to give you fun things to do, you know, with each other.
Right. You know, community is one of those, it's almost like a buzzword right now, you know, in the world of entrepreneurship and starting your own business. I mean, it's just, yes, you have to go out and start a community, but I think there's two ways of doing it. You know, one is really what you just said, you know, focusing in on who you are, being authentic and allowing a community to form around you and then fostering that as it grows. And then two, you know, going out and being so intentional about, I need a community, I need it now, I need to grow this fan base. But like, what I've found, and I'm sure you've seen this as well, is that when you go and try to force it, it comes off as not authentic. It comes off as this, you know, group of people who aren't really into it like you want them to be.
Right.
Yeah.
So I guess speaking to coming off overbearing or unauthentic, you know, that just goes into, again, just be who you are. Like people see through that. And as you talk about the way that content is consumed, you know, whether it's video content, people are going to see if you're not real because they can see you.
Yeah.
You know, they can see the actors that you put in there or the people that you have on camera. They're going to know it's not real. There's a reason why I'm not the person in front of the camera on Nice Kicks because there is a ton of people that know more about that than I do.
Yeah.
Especially our boss, my boss, like our CEO, like he's literally the creator of Nice Kicks. And he tells me so much about what he's doing, what's good, what's bad. And I'm just like, you just blew my mind, dude. You know more about sneakers and shoes than I know about anything. Like I love the NBA and I don't know nearly as much about that as you do about these sneakers. So be authentic to what your subject is.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to come to you in a sense. Like, yes, you have to market yourself in the appropriate way. You need to be smart with your tactics and your storytelling, but just be as true as you can be. And there's going to be an audience that finds you.
Yeah. So you sell advertising.
I do.
And advertising has just devolved in so many ways over the past 50 years. And now I feel like it's something that's evolving daily. But one thing kind of rings true is that a lot of people don't like ads. A lot of people don't like being forced to watch, you know, videos before their video starts, or being forced to check out this modal that pops up with an ad, you know, all of these different, we're inundated with ads nowadays. So how do you combat that as someone who is literally selling that and putting that in front of an audience and a community that you love so much?
The first thing is, and if you're in the advertising world and you're listening to this, I'm going to apologize for this, but I hate ads.
Yeah.
And so I try to look at everything from the perspective of, was I entertained? Did I learn something? And will that now influence me to buy?
Yeah.
And I grew up in the, I guess, internet, the desktop world, and I've transitioned to that of the mobile world. Mobile websites are some of the worst websites on the planet when it comes to ads. You can't even navigate. Like, and you're talking like Business Insider and these websites that like are supposed to be legitimate, and you can't even get on the site to read the content. So there's this love-hate relationship, I guess, that I have with ads. And you know, what I attempt to do and what those who I've worked with most closely attempt to do is really figure out that way to say, how can we present you some sort of advertisement that doesn't feel like you're being sold?
Yeah.
How can we get some sort of interesting story or an authentic voice and compelling content, if you will, that is now transitioning me down the purchase funnel to buying your product? And now if you repeat those stories and you keep doing it well, that's another way of establishing that community, because people will come to you because they like what you're doing.
Right.
Even if it is an ad. I love what Cheddar's doing, right? And I feel like, I wish I could buy that right now. That's basically an ad.
Yeah.
I'm looking up, how can I buy the stuff that Cheddar is featuring? How can I get more involved with some of this stuff? That's an ad, baby.
Yeah.
You know, that's their business is literally showing you the future and showing you advertising.
Yeah.
But then there's those that do it wrong and just throw a bunch of pop-ups in your face.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also those events that you look at and say, I can't wait to see an ad. Super Bowl, right? Like, more people watch that because of the ads than I feel like the game itself.
Yeah, it's
so
true. It's true.
You know, and there is that element of like, let's make them laugh. Let's tell a great story. Let's do something awesome. Mm-hmm. And that is what's going to get people to buy.
Yeah. I think we're at a time now where we talk about SEO and growing your website's traffic organically, because you're allowing algorithms from Google to kind of select which is the best content. You know, I think that we're at a disadvantage in the world of advertising because we can pay to put it in front of people.
Yep.
And because you can pay to put it in front of people, you don't have to do all of those good things to make it show up, to make it appear. And I think we're at a position, and I mean, we've always been there, but I think people are realizing it more and more as these costs are rising with advertising, that you need to really format your ads in a way that is favored not only by the platform that's putting it out there and the people that you're paying the money to, but also the people that are watching. So on that note, you've worked with so many brands to craft storytelling experiences around a product, around just their brand or an event or something that they're promoting. When you go and work with these big brands and know that you have to sell your community on what they're providing, what is that process like? How do you kind of break down that experience with a brand to help them sell something to an audience?
Yeah, so I typically do two things. I always ask an unbiased person And usually that's my wife because she's the closest person to me. And I'm like, hey, what do you think of this? Would you click on this? Would you get involved with this? Mm-hmm. Do you think this is a good idea? And she is such a straight shooter when it comes to me. And that's always my gauge of like, well, wait a second. I'm in too much of my marketer's head. Like I'm in too much of my own head to think that people will take these steps to do it. Because she's very much a mobile phone consumer of content. And like most people, you want that tie in with your brand to be pretty easy, right? Yeah. Like I want to know what the heck this is and I want it pretty easy to identify. The other thing I do is I spend a ridiculous amount of time researching my product and their product. So I'll get on r.com or I get on our website and I'm like, what works? What do people like? What are they starved for? What do they want more of? And I just kind of try to figure that out. And this is usually, sadly enough, case by case. It's every brand is a snowflake, right? Then I look at their brief that they provided, or I look at what's led to their success in the past, or I'll have a coffee meeting with somebody who's willing to talk to me and tell me a little bit about what they're trying to do. And those are usually the two things I'm like, let me figure out what they really want. Let me figure out what our audience wants. Let me figure out what somebody who might see this who doesn't necessarily know our audience would feel. And then it's, okay, let's get to work. Now let's put together a program. Let's blow some doors off. Let's try to get some press on this. Like, let's do something big that when the client, if you will, when they see it, is going to say, yes, that's awesome. Nobody's ever told us that before. And I can see how it directly relates to sales for me. So yes, we want to do that. Or let's scale it down a little bit. That's a little bit too exciting for us. Maybe that will be step two.
Oh, man. So this is a lesson that I think everyone needs to really hone in on. Because if you're out there creating advertising for your business and you are crafting all this creative and writing your copy and figuring out how you are going to sell your product to a marketplace of people out there on different platforms, you have to sit down and talk to yourself. As stupid as that sounds, you have to talk to yourself because you are your own client at that point. I think there's so many similarities in this idea of like working with a client to help them sell your brand and working with yourself as a client to help you sell your brand and spending that time to really focus in on, man, how can I meet people where they're at when I'm putting my product in front of them and make it not feel like an ad? You know, we've spent so much time figuring out how do you not make this feel like an ad, but make it feel like content. And I don't necessarily know if that's the best way to go about it, you know, make it blend in so much that it doesn't feel like an ad, but make it feel like it's something that people want to see where they're at.
And I guess with that, one of the easier ways I feel like that, you know, a small business owner can activate this is really showcasing that they're an expert in their craft.
Yeah.
You know, there's a thousand ways to get involved, but speaking specifically from the content standpoint, take to LinkedIn, take to YouTube, practice before you do it, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't like how you look in front of a camera, like do a different few camera angles or take your cell phone and stuff, but take to LinkedIn and say, hey, I want to give you one tip today. Here's one tip that's going to help you save money. Or here's one tip that slowly starts leading people into A, thinking that you know what you're talking about, and B, coming to you for advice. And then you can slowly start to hit them with, I guess, call it, you know, more blatant, if you will, advertising that says, oh, well, wait a second. I love this person. They always give me great advice. They've given me a bunch of stuff for free that all I have to do is get on their YouTube channel or get on their LinkedIn page, and this is adding value. So I'm more willing to buy from them because they know what the heck they're talking about.
Yeah. That's why the influencer space is so effective, is because these people are trusted. These brands are trusted to promote a product or to promote a service. It's a no-brainer. It reminds me of the stages or the levels of intimacy. Our CEO, Ryan, talks about this all the time. Don't go to somebody and ask them to marry you if you're on your first date.
Yeah.
Like, you have to court people in a way, you know, through advertising, and again, make them trust you, become a trusted source of knowledge and a trusted source of expertise before you, you know, say, hey, buy my for lack of a better term.
Yeah. It's, you use that term. I use sales funnel.
Yeah.
So it's, hey, these people aren't quite ready for this. They're not. They're not quite ready for this. They need me to hold their hand a little bit longer. They need me to, you know, provide them better, interesting content. If I want them to sign up for my email, I've got to give them something that's awesome, something that's of value, something they can't get anywhere else.
Yeah.
And then if they start not looking at my emails, I should probably start giving them more good stuff. Like, if your product is that good, give them stuff for free. Let them try it out. Let them really experience what it is and the value that they're getting from that. And then make that move to say, hey, if you would like to continue this, like, it's going to cost you XYZ.
Yeah. Let's talk about video.
Let's talk about it.
So we experienced it in the publishing world, you know, this pivot to video, all of these massive brands putting tons and tons of money into creating video studios to then go out and create advertising for companies through content. And it really wasn't the ticket. I guess that's how I would put it. It just didn't really work for so many brands. I mean, you see so many companies who have, you know, laid off massive amounts of people because this pivot to video didn't work, but everyone did it. Everyone did it. It was the talk of the town. It was the thing to do. But just because that didn't work, I know for a fact that video isn't dead. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts on video in the world of advertising. And, you know, what are some of the things that people are doing right in the world of video that are helping to propel products and services forward?
That's a great question. I think, for starters, at least from what I've seen in the video space, is I think you really need to start with talent development.
Yeah.
You need to make sure that whoever it is that you want to put on camera is a face that people are going to start getting used to, and they're going to get better at what they're doing. So I think that's where a lot of brands might go wrong, is there's really no face or no talent behind what they're doing. They're sinking all this money into high production value, which looks great if you're a movie studio, but you and I, or your everyday person, doesn't necessarily see that. They want to make a connection with the people or the person that is in that video that's speaking to. And I think you mentioned it earlier, influencer marketing, and why that's doing so well. It's because they've developed their craft and they are developing their talents in front of camera.
Yeah.
The second thing is, don't throw all your money into production. Anybody who's worked with me from the production side of things is probably like, what the heck is this guy talking about? Because sometimes we do some interesting and crazy stuff. But again, going back to the influencer statement that you made, the production level is low on those things. There's a lot of people with their cell phone or mobile phone, what do they call it these days? Their smartphone, and they've got great cameras on there, and they're using a bunch of video effects that they're getting within apps, and they're saying, hey, let's just make something cool and fun, and let's try to connect there. The next thing is, don't be afraid to be real. Don't be afraid to be silly. Don't be afraid to just be yourself, and you can create a low production video with yourself that does extremely well if you're thinking about the value that it adds to the person watching it. It's not about you, it's about them. And I mean, that's it. Like, when we put together some of our most successful pieces of video content, a lot of it was, it's a person telling an awesome story.
Yeah.
And that person was super interesting. They were to the point where they weren't like super odd. Like, yeah, there were some odd things about them, but they were very relatable in this, like, oh my gosh, that's me. I was like that. Or, oh, that's just like my mom. You know, like, you see those people in video, and then you say, I want to share that. I want somebody else to learn about that. I need to show this to the world because I can relate to this, and this person's telling an interesting story.
Yes. That right there is something that's so important that I think gets lost on a lot of content creation, is relatability.
Yeah.
I mean, feeling like you're a part of something is so important. Whether you're a consumer who's looking to buy something or just consume content, you have to relate in order to want to continue consuming.
Yeah.
One thing that I've been thinking about is, just, we look at advertising on YouTube, and video pre-roll ads that play before, they're usually, you know, what, 30 seconds long. I've seen a few of these videos that are like 6 minutes long, and I'm like, who the hell would watch an ad that's skippable for 6 minutes? But at the same moment, had the realization of, that's exactly what that advertiser wants. They don't want any of those people who are going to sit there and watch it for 30 seconds. They want the people who are going to watch it 50% or longer, going to spend that time with them in an advertisement.
And I've gotten caught up in that. I am guilty of on our TV watching YouTube. Uh-huh. And primarily when we watch YouTube on our TV, it's usually movie trailers or it's toy review style videos.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So we're watching, we're watching with our son and, you know, it'll be a mid-roll or it'll be post-roll or pre-roll, something before, you know, an interesting part of this toy review, and it'll be another toy review. So it's literally an ad of a different person reviewing a toy. And I am the bottom of the totem pole in our house. I am not the boss. Our son is our boss.
Yep,
and so he literally was like, nope, we're watching this one. And I'm like, okay. So we'll sit through a 6-minute ad watching a toy review. And I'm like, all right, like, you got it, pal. Like,
wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm guilty of watching those.
Yeah. And I bet you he's asking for more of those.
He is.
All the time.
Well, he's asking for the toys in it.
Yeah. Well, of course.
I mean, that's a, well, we could talk forever about toy review videos and how that's a genius way to.
I would love to sit down for an hour and talk about the power of these toy review channels.
Unbelievable.
For everyone listening, if you aren't familiar, just type in toy review on YouTube and you'll just see the outlandish amount of videos that are being consumed by the millions daily. I mean, it's like a whole industry. It's weird.
But there's a lot of learnings you can take from that. Again, these are filmed usually by parents on their phone. Sometimes there's a better camera. And a lot of it is just role play. It's, hey, let's set up a really cool ramp for these cars to go off of. And they're going to go off the ramp into water. And like kids go bananas for it. They're like, this is a cool story. I want to act this out. I can relate to this.
Yeah.
And you think about that and you adapt that to your own business. Like, how is, can I create something that is relatable enough, but then aspirational enough that I'm going to inspire others to maybe try this.
Yeah.
Right. So like there's really a lot to learn from those. I'm sitting there taking notes like, man, that was kind of a genius idea by this 4-year-old. Right.
So. Yeah. Well, it comes back to that talent development. It's like the stars of those videos are not the parents. It's the 3-year-old who's opening and playing with these toys.
Yeah.
Relating to that audience. And
yeah.
Wow.
We filmed one of those with my son and he panicked. He just got super nervous and he's like, what do I say? And I'm like, I don't know, dude. Like, this is all you.
Yeah. This is your world. I'm just living in it.
Yeah.
Wow. There is a lot to be learned from those channels. They're killing it. I think number 3 or number 1 channel on YouTube. I don't know. Something like that is
Ryan's toy review. Yeah. I think he's 7 or 8 now. I think he made 22 million this last year. So whatever I'm doing it wrong.
Yeah. If I could be making 22 million at 3 years old, I don't know what I would do.
Yeah. Yeah. He's And I mean, they've spun off. They have other channels. They have other people working with them. Like, they've created a legitimate business from a kid who was being authentic. He just loves to play with toys. And his parents were like, let's pick up the camera and film some stuff so we can watch it.
Yeah.
And it just blew up.
Yeah. Let's dive into your crystal ball a little bit.
Okay.
So pull it out your pocket. Let's stare into it. What's on the horizon for the world of advertising? I mean, we're seeing a lot of changes, you know, especially with Facebook and Google under fire for all the data protection stuff.
What have they done wrong?
Oh, I'll send you some articles. But, you know, there's just a lot going on, you know, whether it's technology or content-based. What are kind of some of your predictions for the world of advertising as we move into the next couple of years?
Yeah, great question. So I think there is going to be, specifically based in content, there's going to be a renewed focus on shoppable content.
Yeah.
Connecting the dots between, hey, this is something, a piece of video content that I saw, instead of me having to scroll down and then clicking a link or hoping that the person stays around long enough to the end so they can click on a link to buy it. It's being able to say, oh my gosh, this is in real time. I want to buy this right now. Oh, and by the way, I can buy this on this platform.
Yeah.
So I think Pinterest is unbelievable and they're doing it right. And I know they're really ramping up their marketing efforts to get more businesses on their platform because it is a shoppable, friendly environment. We've seen a lot in that world of Facebook with Instagram and their shoppable content.
Which is amazing.
Yep.
If you haven't checked that out, check it out.
Yep. YouTube, they've been doing that for years. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a few external partners that help create a cleaner experience for creating shoppable video.
Yeah.
But I think that is going to be something that's very compelling, because if you're getting somebody to look at your video for 4 or 5 minutes and you have the ability to get them to buy from that video, you're looking at a lot of money funneling that way. And it's non-intrusive too.
Yeah.
So I think that's one thing. We saw a bit of a splash in the pan with Facebook last year in terms of the world of live.
Yeah.
But I think Twitch has been doing that very, very well for a long time. YouTube plays in that space. Instagram Live. I mean, all of these kind of social platforms are experimenting and still trying to figure out the world of live viewing and live content, basically replicating what broadcast TV was.
Yeah.
So I think that refocus on live and getting thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions of people to stop what they're doing and lean in on one exact moment is amazing. There's so much potential there, and it's very difficult to do.
Yeah.
You look at HQ, you know, and
HQ trivia.
Yeah. HQ. I mean, for a while they were the hottest thing in the app world because they did that. They got people to tune in right then, right there. So that, I think, is going to be a renewed focus for next year.
Yeah.
How do we get people right here, right now? And how do we charge an arm and a leg to advertisers or to brands or to those that want to be involved in this environment? And then this isn't new, but again, that evolution of streaming. We're looking at connected TVs and connected boxes and things like that that allow you to stream. You're looking at the revenue of your traditional cable or traditional satellite parts of companies just tanking. Mm-hmm. And that element of how can I stream and how can I have this one connected sign-in or network from my phone to my computer to my TV to my voice box that I'm speaking into that's telling me what the weather is, right? Like that element of like, let's connect your home and let's connect everything that you have within your person is going to continue to be big. So those are my not innovative, but those are my three predictions.
I see it. Hearing you talk about those things, it's like, it just makes so much sense. It's absolutely where we're heading.
Yeah.
In terms of the shoppable content, I remember it must have been three and a half years ago now, looking at a video platform that allowed you to have like clickable t-shirts. And but like at the time it was revolutionary and too far ahead. And it was hard because at that moment in time, we were so used to Facebook video and YouTube video. And then this is a whole new video player. So it's like now that these big players are getting involved in that, the opportunities are endless for people.
Yeah. I mean, think about this. So LeBron James, very, very popular basketball player. He's also got an interesting fashion sense. Well, one thing that TNT, that ESPN, ABC, that they do is they'll show them in the tunnel walking through with all their flashy outfits and stuff that could be very expensive, stuff that could be very inexpensive. We've actually talked about this from a shoe standpoint. What if I'm watching that, maybe it's a replay the next day, highlight reel or something, and I have the ability to buy those shoes. Oh, those are sweet shoes. Boom, I can click on it and buy it right there. I don't have to, what was LeBron wearing, you know, like on Google, like that. That is
I've done that a
difficult process.
Times.
It's like, boom, what if I can just click on those shoes and buy them from that video?
Yep.
Like there's so much potential. And again, it's non-intrusive. It's just a little dot, just a little blurb that pops up and you don't click on it, it goes away, and you can rewind, you can go back to it. It's all there and accessible.
It's like Shazam, but for shopping.
Yeah.
It's like, what's this song? Oh, what are those shoes? What's that shirt? It's so natural. And with us being in such a world of instant gratification, it only makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. Last question. Well, two more questions, but this is the last official question. My favorite question of the day. All of your experiences over the years with all of these awesome brands. And by the way, we ask this question of everyone that comes on the show.
Probably should have done more research.
No, there's no research to be done. This is full introspection mode. So what's something that you wish you could go back and tell 25-year-old Albert now knowing what you know?
That is a fantastic question. I would say control your emotions.
Okay.
For the most part, I'm pretty even keel. People don't see me get mad very much. And I think there are certain times where I've been upset, you know, maybe I said something dumb over email to somebody or had a conversation and I was really upset mm-hmm. and said something dumb. And, you know, I look back and say, gosh, what are the things that I wish that I probably could have taken back in this space? And it's, you know, saying mean things to people or not respecting somebody's views or letting my emotions get the best of me. Again, I don't think it happens a ton, but I look at those incidents as ones that stuck out to me through my career path. And you never want to make enemies in that sense. You always want to cultivate people and help them learn and be around positive people. So I would say that would be what I wish I could tell 25-year-old AB.
AB. Well, AB, thanks for stopping by. This was so much fun. Where can people find more about you, what you've got going on?
You can follow me on LinkedIn.
All right.
Albert Briggs. I'm the one that works at Nice Kicks. You can check us out on Nice Kicks. That's at Nice Kicks if you're on Instagram, or you can go to nicekicks.com. Or if you want to see what we're doing on Made for Dad, we're getting ready to start pushing out a ton of new content right after the holidays.
Woo.
Yeah, I know Garrett's happy for that. You can check us out on Instagram at Made for Dad.
Cool. Albert, it's been a pleasure. I'm sure we'll see you around again, but thanks so much for stopping by.
Yeah, I'd love to hop back on when we want to talk about toy reviews.
Yes, and we will. We'll do a whole we'll do a whole deep dive.
We'll live stream push-up competitions. We'll just I might start working here soon, so we'll see. It's been awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. All right, man. Take it easy.
All right.
You've been listening to the Digital Marketer Podcast. For more information and show notes, go to digitalmarketer.com/podcast. Thanks for listening.
Hey, DM listeners, if you're running a Black Friday or Cyber Monday special, listen up, because Digital Marketer just released our Canva Holiday Promo Pack. It includes almost 200 templates that you can use to make the graphics for all your upcoming holiday specials and 3 unique design themes for each holiday. The Promo Pack is usually $27, but you can get it today for free. Check the show notes for the link to download, or you can go directly to digitalmarketer.com/LP/holiday templates. That's digitalmarketer.com/LP/holiday templates.